This is Talking Business. Joining me now is Colin Ellis, who seems to have turned a career in project management into another career in project management, which is educating people about it. Is that does that sound right, Colin?
Yeah, that sounds about right, Alan. Yeah, started way back when, 20 years ago, as a project manager, and you know, keen to educate people on how to get it right, because we don't seem to be doing a particularly good job.
Now, how do you go about it? Do you run courses or just talk to people, do conferences and so on?
Yeah, so speaking and training, Alan, is generally how I educate people. I've also written a couple of books which have been popular in project management circles. But yeah, speaking at conferences and training is generally the way.
Tell us about what are the key sort of attributes of a good project manager?
Well, project management is a relationship and a communication business, principally, Alan. I think that gets forgotten a lot of the time, particularly in government. We know there's a rush to follow a process. But what great project managers do is they know how to build and retain relationships, and they know how to communicate a message in different ways so that everybody understands what's happening and when it's happening. Now, they've still got to have a lot of technical expertise in project management so they can build a good plan to get the thing delivered. But they're great at relationships and they're great at communication.
Yeah, right. So, and one of the things you're on about is how important project management is. And in fact, it's really kind of the core of business in a way, because everything starts as a project.
Everything does. I'm not suggesting that everything should be a project, Alan, but it's the way that we grow our businesses is through our projects. You know, we run our businesses and we grow our businesses. And every year we come up with plans to grow our business, to exploit opportunities or to address risks. And the way to do that is through projects. So we need to be really good at it.
You, on your website, you make things easier for an interview by having a list of 13 things about me on your website.
Yeah.
Which I wonder whether you're embarrassed about that or not, because it's quite funny.
Oh, I'm from a part of the UK, I'm from Liverpool, where we generally take our work seriously, but not ourselves, Alan. So I like to put those little things out there just to prove that I'm a human being.
You do. Now, your signature scent, I've got the number 7. Your signature, I've never heard of Grey Vetiver by Tom Ford.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you not have a signature scent, Alan?
No, I'm afraid I don't. I'm obviously getting left behind. I'm going to have to find myself a signature scent.
It's a good...
me. My signature scent is my underarm deodorant, and that's about it.
I was going to say other people might have a different opinion on your signature scent, yeah.
Oh, that's probably as far as we need to go on that subject. Now, it paints a picture of you as a sort of a bit of a character, I guess. You write with a fountain pen, you never run for a train but you use public transport, you love listening to music, Sanders said you've got, what else, your favourite book is On the Road by Jack Kerouac. Well, that's a good book.
Yeah.
What was good about that book? And did that sort of help form you as a project manager?
Well, my personality definitely does, Alan. On the Road I read when I was 17, and it really kind of unlocked this little travelling instinct in me that I didn't have. But I love the way that Kerouac wrote, because he wrote with a particular flair and a style, and for those of you who know it, it was just one continuous piece of paper. But I spoke at a conference in Las Vegas last year, and someone said to me afterwards, he said, "You're the first project manager I've ever spoken to who's got a personality." It was a terrible thing to say. Not only about the individuals that he's come into contact with, but also the profession generally, is that, you know, we're seen as such this staid and boring profession, when really, you know, our personality, but the personality of project manager, is one of the most important things for getting things delivered successfully. There's a professor here in Sydney, Dr. Lynn Crawford, who said, once you've got a base knowledge of project management, more knowledge doesn't make you any better. It's your personality and leadership style. And we just don't see it enough, I don't feel, in projects.
But that's very interesting, isn't it? I mean, as you say, most people would regard project managers as pretty boring. And in fact, but you're saying that that's actually a negative. Being boring is makes you a bad project manager. Well, so what's going on? Why is there that disconnect?
Because what we tried to do, particularly over the last 20 years, Alan, is we've tried to tell people that following a process is the way to deliver projects. You know, in the UK, you know, I cut my teeth in project management way back when the world was going to end for year 2000. And in those days, we very much relied on kind of the relationships that we built, you know, to get things done quickly. Post that, we realized that we'd spent way too much money doing these projects. And, you know, as a project manager in the UK, our response to that was let's implement a method by which we, you know, going to deliver projects. And in a sense, we took the personality out and put the process in. And yet there's no proof, none, that process, you know, alone works as a mechanism for getting projects delivered. And yet we're still doing it time and time again. We're still all the major project failures you see around the world is people talk about, oh, we've got consistency, but it's never consistency of communication or of relationship building. It's all about consistency of process. So we've replaced personality with process, which isn't proven to work.
So speaking of project failures, what do you think of the NBN? Do you think it is a project failure? Or and what would you be doing differently if you were running that project?
Well, you know, firstly, with the NBN, there's lots of good people doing lots of good stuff to implement the technology. I think where the NBN's fallen down is firstly, the case for it wasn't properly planned. You know, there was kind of a business case, and then it got changed, and then there was never a proper plan for implementation. And that's always the first sign the project's going to go wrong is when the government says, oh, it's going to cost, you know, $2 billion, or whoever says it's going to cost $2 billion, and then it changes and we don't replan it. I think the technology changed throughout the project, though, and what they should have done is to stop, or what I would have done is stopped and said, okay, well, listen, this was our intent originally. This is the business case. That's changed because, you know, the pace of technology and, you know, what we've got access to now has changed. So what we need to do is reassess what it is that we're doing and decide whether it's the right approach. You know, and there was a real lack of courage, I feel, Alan, to sort of, you know, from anybody in government to say, you know what, this is what we said we do. It's not valid anymore. So we're going to stop that and we're going to do this instead. And I think too often there's this kind of either blind optimism or this real determination to deliver on something that's just not going to work. And I think that's what we're seeing now with NBN is we're still trying to roll this thing out and convince people it's a good idea when actually it was probably ceased to be a good idea about 3 or 4 years ago.
Well, it was changed for political reasons rather than anything else. It was they did stop it and start again, but it was a political decision.
They did, but they carried on doing the same thing though, Alan. And you know, they stopped it and said we'll replan it, and then they never replanned it properly. They spent a fortune on getting reports, most of which they ignored.
So to what extent is a successful project due to the business plan, the plan, you know, the detail and care taken to the plan, and how much of the success is due to the project manager? I mean, I presume you've got to have both, but I mean, can a decent project manager overcome a bad business plan? Or not?
Yes, they can. Every year, project management surveys, they come up with lists 14 to 16 things of why projects fail. There's only really two reasons for project failure, and that's the executive that sponsors the project and then the person responsible for delivering it, which is the project manager. They're the only two reasons for project failure, because every decision that happens within a project can be owned and changed by either of those people. You know, one of the things that I encourage project managers to do and show them how to do is to be a bit more courageous. You know, if someone says you have to skip a planning stage, well, that's your integrity as a project manager. That's your job to produce a plan. And it's a plan to deliver, you know, against a realistic schedule so that everyone understands what they're going to get and when they're going to get it.
So would you say that the business plan and the schedule and all that stuff is unimportant?
No, it's absolutely crucially important, but you need a good person to lead it first and foremost. And a good person, Alan, understands that the plan is the thing that you always come back to. You know, I always say that's your reputation in that document right there for delivery.
And is it best if the project manager creates the plan, writes the plan?
Yeah, they need a team of people to help them do it. You know, I think where we've seen some failures in the past, the project manager said, this is mine, I'm doing it, it's all mine. But really, where you build what we call engagement at the start of a project is when you involve everybody in it and say, okay, collectively, we need to create this plan. And then, you know, once it's completed, we go back to the original business case and say, okay, well, this is what it's going to take to implement this thing against this is what you know, said. Sydney Light Rail project is a great example. Already at $1.2 billion dollars, and I'd love to see the plan that justifies that spend again, you know, against the original business case. You know, I've got friends here in Sydney who still don't know why they're doing it. So you need that plan. It provides the justification for the intent.
Yeah, and what about time blowouts? You know, if the schedule blows out, how important is it for the person to get it back on track, or does it matter?
Oh, you know, I think for some reason we've got ourselves into this position where we think on time, on budget is, you know, it's just going to happen. According to KPMG, less than 40% of projects ever deliver on time and to budget. I think what we don't do very well is manage expectation. We're not very good at communicating. We're not very good at saying, hey, listen, we said it'd be ready at the end of December. However, because of these one, two, three things, which are important for these reasons, it's now going to be the end of March. I think, you know, particularly in public sector, we get frustrated as taxpayers when people don't tell us, either they don't do enough planning or they don't tell us why this thing is going to be late and why it's going to be delayed. So I think, you know, on time, it can be important, particularly for legislative projects, but not necessarily for everything else, as long as we make change for the right reason.
Well, fascinating, Colin. Great to talk to you. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Alan. Thank you.
I've been talking to Colin Ellis of colindellis.com, a project manager, educator and speaker, also author of two best-selling books, The Conscious Project Leader and The Project Rots from the Head.